I'm reading from Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 11 through 17. Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had spent in doing it. And again, all was vanity and a chasing after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. So I turned to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the one do who comes after the king? Only what has already been done. Then I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise have eyes in their head, but fools walk in darkness. Yet I perceived that the same fate befalls all of them. Then I said to myself, what happens to the fool will happen to me also. Why then have I been so very wise? And I said to myself that this also is vanity, for there is no enduring remembrance of the wise or of fools, seeing that in the days to come, all will have been long forgotten. How can the wise die just like the fools? So I hated life, because what is done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is vanity and a chasing after wind. The word of God for the people of God.
Well, it's good to be here. Again, as we've said already, it is, you know, I've tried to really have a positive attitude and just make the best. And we've seen God do some good things, you know, in the midst of this. I think he's teaching us some stuff, but it's good to see you. Yeah, it's just good to see you and to have you here with us. And I know we still can't do a lot of the things, you know, we can't greet one another with a holy kiss, which we don't do that anymore anyway, but our holy kiss today is usually a hug. And it's just, you know, they're interesting times that we're living in, and not just with the COVID-19, but just with a lot of the things happening in our country and nation today. So, and I'll kind of touch on some of those things as we go here. But so Sarah just read from the book of Ecclesiastes. And Ecclesiastes is a biblical book that really is both intriguing and disturbing, actually, when you read through it. If you really read it, it's just kind of, it's disturbing. I find it interesting. I was sharing this with the group this morning. Ecclesiastes is actually one of the first books I read after I became a Christian. I don't know, I was drawn to it. I'd come out of that. I had lived it. I came to Jesus because I came to this conclusion that all was vanity. It was all worthless. It was meaningless. My life had no purpose. And so I think there was something about Ecclesiastes that I actually kind of connected to. I was like, I get that. I can relate to that. And I think it is a powerful book as we seek to try to understand it and take it for what it says. But one of the things about Ecclesiastes is it kind of smacks you upside the head. It doesn't mince words. It really portrays life the way it is and takes an honest look at stuff that we tend to not want to look at. We don't want to look at that. We don't want to face those particular things, but Ecclesiastes does that. There are some, by the way, who wonder if Ecclesiastes would be better suited as required reading for a philosophy class on existentialism than to be a book in the Bible. You know, why is it amongst the wisdom literature of the Bible? And I think that is, you know, I understand the question, but it is definitely there for a purpose, obviously. Now, I'm going to give you just a definition of existentialism, because I'm using the word, and a lot of times we use words and don't know what they mean. So bear with me as I give you the definition. Existentialism is a tradition of philosophy, a philosophical inquiry that explores the nature of existence by emphasizing experience of the human subject, not merely the thinking subject, which is what a lot of philosophy is. It's just kind of these ponderings of the mind, but the acting, feeling, living human individual. So just bear with me a little bit longer because this is important. In view of the existentialist, the individual starting point is characterized by what has been called the existential angst. I'm pausing the definition because I just see this in the world today. So what existential angst it's like this, people are experiencing a sense of disorientation, confusion, or anxiety in the face of an apparently meaningless or absurd world. Did you catch that? I mean, if you look at life without God, in many ways, it is absurd. There are things that happen in life that we can't even begin to try to understand or figure out. The question, why? Why? That it's a valid question. But without God, there is no answer to the question. People ask the question and get no response, or they try to get responses by trying different things. Are you kind of with me? Those of you now, I can't ask that of the people at home, but I can ask it of you here. And this is a valid question. And you may say that the Bible would never teach something like that, and I agree. But listen to what the preacher, as this person is called, of Ecclesiastes says. He said, "Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun." The phrase "under the sun," by the way, is super important to understand in the book of Ecclesiastes. When the author says, he says it 30 times throughout the book, "under the sun." And the key to understanding it is understanding what it means. It means our view of the world when we leave God out of the picture. So when the writer is saying this and this and that, it was all meaningless when I looked at everything that happens under the sun, that is what the author is saying. The author is saying, and when I looked at life without God, when I just looked at life, took it for what it was, and left God out of the picture, this is what I was left with. It was all meaningless and vanity, a chasing after the wind. Ecclesiastes describes life without God most of the time. Now, there are some inserts of God in there, and we're going to talk about that as we go through the series. But the writer takes a serious look at the meaning of life and finds himself looking into the frightening abyss, vanity of vanities, says the preacher. All is vanity. That's not a very happy conclusion to the story, is it? That sense, though, is what many people carry with them in their life. What's the purpose? What's the meaning of life? If we are honest, we would admit that experience confronts humans with many, apparent disharmonies and anomalies that wisdom and philosophy just cannot unravel. There's just things that happen in life, and we just cannot explain it. Especially if we're just looking at life under the sun. And Ecclesiastes is a study of these seemingly unresolvable tensions of life. And of all these, the greatest shock, I think, to the human experience, really, when it comes right down to it, is that all life comes to the same end. Foolish or wise, rich or poor, famous or unknown, faithful or not faithful, even to God, our fate is the same as all other living things. And again, Ecclesiastes just pulls no punches, so neither will I. But the same fate awaits us all, and that is death. He writes, "I also thought about the human condition, how God proves to people that they are like animals. For people and animals share the same fate, both breathe and both must die. So people have no real advantage over the animals. How meaningless. Both go to the same place. They came from the dust and they return to dust." Now remember, this is a description of life under the sun. This is a description of a life without God. And obviously, he's not saying that people and animals are the same, because if they were, he wouldn't be so upset by it. Right? He wouldn't be so upset. How can the same fate await us all? So if this does not sound like the existential angst, I'm not aware of how else really to communicate it. So why am I talking about this? Why are we doing a sermon series on Ecclesiastes during a worldwide crisis of the COVID-19 and a nationwide serious situation in regards to systemic racism? Why would we be talking about Ecclesiastes during these times? Well, I'm going to just share two reasons real quick, and then we'll keep moving on. First, it's because this is how an overwhelming number of people feel. And I don't know about you, but I sometimes just get overwhelmed. I look at the issues and I look at the things that are happening in our nation. I look at, I don't know, I just get overwhelmed by it all. And I try to, when I try to figure it out, it's overwhelming. And I've got God. I have a God that I can look to. I can try to step back and put things in an eternal perspective. But can you imagine with me again, or maybe you remember what it was like yourself when God was not a part of your life and there was nothing? What did you do with it all? You throw your hands up in the air and you go out and shoot up another, you know, some drugs, or you go, whatever we do, we rampage through life. Many of us turn to another thing that's called hedonism, where we just pursue pleasure, as does the writer of Ecclesiastes. We're not going to touch on that so much today. He said, I tried it all. I mean, if this is actually Solomon, yeah, he did try it all. He had like 700 concubines, 300 wives. He pursued pleasure of all forms. And what does he say in the end again? It was all meaningless. It provided me with nothing. But this is what we do. This is what human beings do. We turn to these different things, or we just look at it again. And many just say it's all absurd. There's no point. I think this is why Ecclesiastes appeals to so many people. I think this is why the birds sang to every season, turn, turn, turn. You know, I mean, some of you don't even know. Sorry, that's going back a long ways. But we're in the 60s now. But, people have looked to this book. Some maybe haven't fully grasped its conclusion, which is what we're going to finally resolve a lot of the tension. We'll do it a little bit every Sunday, but it all resolves in the end. But people look to it, even people that don't consider themselves to be religious. And I think it's because it's the problems it's dealing with, and even the surface response in Ecclesiastes, it identifies with our life. There are millions of people out there who, in a sense, just say, we may as well eat and drink and do whatever, for tomorrow we die. In fact, I'll just tell you that there was a point, it was about probably 3-4 days before I finally surrendered my life to Jesus, and something happened in my life, and I won't go into all the details of it at all because I don't have the time, but I actually said this. These are the words that came out of my mouth. I said, I am going to drink, I'm going to do drugs, I am going to do whatever I want, I'm going to wreak havoc, I'm going to just, I won't get more explicit because there are children in the room, but young people in the room, and I made a conscious choice that I was going to do whatever I wanted, no matter who got hurt, until I died. And I think the Lord took that as a challenge. Oh, yeah? We'll see about that. 4 days later, I came to give my life to Jesus. The second reason, just real quick, why we're studying the book of Ecclesiastes now is that if we dig into it, it provides real answers to the meaning of life, in contrast to the hedonistic, which is pleasure-focused, and existential, which is meaningless, culture that we live in today. You do know that, right? You do know that you live, and I live, in a hedonistic, existential culture for the most part. Life is absurd. So we do two things. We either just get it all while we can and get as much pleasure as we can right now, or we wrestle with, we have angst. We're angry because there's no point to it all. So what are we to do, you know? Ecclesiastes just confronts this, and I'm going to get to the kind of the heart of it today, right now. And this is a little bit long here, but Sarah actually read it just a few moments ago. But in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 11 through 17, this is what he says. He says, "Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had spent in doing it. And again, all was vanity, a chasing after the wind. And there was nothing to be gained under the sun. So I turned to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can one do who comes after the king? Only what has already been done. Then I saw that wisdom exceeds folly as the light excels darkness." So here he's saying, well, wisdom is a better way to go. But then he just listen to what he says. "The wise have eyes in their head, but fools walk in darkness. Yet I perceive," again, the same thing. "I perceive that the same fate befalls all of them. Then I said to myself, what happens to the fool happened to me also. Why then have I become so very wise? Why bother? And I said to myself that this is also vanity." Reminds me of a song, actually. A song that was written by a guy back in 1977. So again, I'm going back a ways. But it's a song called "Dust in the Wind." And this guy was not a believer. And this is, listen to the words that he sang here. I was tempted to sing them, but I won't. "I closed my eyes only for a moment, and the moment's gone. All my dreams passed before my eyes, a curiosity. Dust in the wind. All they are is dust in the wind. Same old song, just a drop of water in an endless sea. All we do crumbles to the ground, though we refuse to see. Dust in the wind. All we are is dust in the wind. Now don't hang on. Nothing lasts forever but the earth and sky. It slips away. And all your money won't another minute buy. Dust in the wind. All we are is dust in the wind." It's actually a beautiful song. 2 years later, in 1979, this young man gave his heart to Jesus and is still serving the Lord today. He also wrote "Carry On My Wayward Son" for anybody who's interested. Obviously, a guy who was searching. But in the midst of that search, all seemed meaningless to him. Again, he said, "What he said? What's the point? We're just dust in the wind." Going back to Ecclesiastes again, "For everything there is a season, a time for every activity under heaven, a time to be born, and a time to die." This is the reality. So how are we to live in light of death? The question is going to be strongly answered in our final message, as I said before, but what can we glean from Ecclesiastes today? In some ways, the answer is going to be similar to what Tony shared last Sunday, but I'm going to put a little different spin on it, come at it from a little different way. The difference in the message is that Tony asked about finding meaning in life, while I'm asking, how do we find meaning in light of the great equalizer? And again, Ecclesiastes pulls no punches. The great equalizer for us all is death. Culturally, we are not comfortable with the subject of death, and many, if not most, are fearful of death. And this leads us back to where I started today, the existential angst, or a sense of disorientation, confusion, or anxiety in the face of a meaningless or absurd world. Ecclesiastes is a study of the absurdity of life under the sun. But Ecclesiastes takes that absurdity and points us to meaning. And this is what's important. It takes a while to get there. But he takes the absurdity of life. And life on so many levels is absurd. Come on. Isn't it? Things happen that shouldn't happen. Things go on that make absolutely no sense. And if we're honest about it, that is the reality of life under the sun. But thank God Ecclesiastes doesn't leave us there. And I won't fully resolve it today, but I can to a certain point. Again, he says, the reality is, we're all going to die. And then he says this, yet God has made everything beautiful for its own time. He has planted eternity in the human heart. Now catch this. It's like in the midst of this struggle of everything under the sun, he is coming back to remember. In fact, I'm going to interrupt this, just take a brief hiatus to say, I believe that the book of Ecclesiastes was written at the end of Solomon's life. And I think it is his view back on everything that he had done. He was not only considered to be the wisest person in the entire world, even up to this day, people talk about the wisdom of Solomon, but he acquired massive amounts of wealth. He went on huge building programs. He had 700 concubines and 300 wives. I mean, this guy had everything. And he looks back on his life and says, it was meaningless. I actually think, and this is just me, and you know, Solomon, if you can hear me, I don't know how that works, forgive me, but I think Solomon really backslid. I think Solomon had a good chunk of his life where he was pursuing all these other things and not God. And I think Ecclesiastes is his final treatise, actually. And he comes to a conclusion again. If you want to cheat, you can go read the end of the story. I'm not going to tell it to you today. But he does say this in the midst of it all. Yet God has made everything beautiful for its own time. He has planted eternity in the human heart. In other words, the reason death is so hard is because it's not meant to be. We weren't created to die originally. And death has come into our world and it hits us and it takes us out. Not only us, but those around us, those who experience it in life. But even so, he goes on to say, people cannot see the whole scope of God's working from beginning to end. Man, that is powerful. When we are in the midst of stuff, when life seems so absurd and so crazy, we struggle to see the big picture. We really cannot grasp fully the big picture that God knows. God sees the beginning from the end. So I concluded there is nothing better than to be happy and enjoy ourselves as long as we can. And people should eat and drink and enjoy the fruits of their labor, for these are gifts from God. I don't think that's the full response, but I think he's getting there. Because you could take this to a pleasure-seeking life again, but that's not what he's saying. I think he's agreeing more with the psalmist who said this, teach us to realize the brevity of life so that we may grow in wisdom. The Message Bible says it this way, oh, teach us to live well, teach us to live wisely and well. I think that in some ways Ecclesiastes is like the Christmas carol of the Bible. You know the story of the Christmas carol. Most of you have seen the movie. You know it was a book first, right? Okay. But in the book, Ebenezer Scrooge is confronted on Christmas Eve with the three spirits, the spirit of his past, the spirit of his present, and the spirit of the future. And what is really his conclusion? He doesn't really say it. In the end, what is he confronted with? It's all meaningless. You totally blew it, dude. You've acquired all this wealth. You've done all this stuff. And look at the wretchedness of your own life. And what happens to Ebenezer Scrooge? He has a change of heart. When he sees life under the sun, he has a change of heart. I think A Christmas Carol actually reflects the truth that I'm trying to share with you today. Again, that God has made everything beautiful for its own time. He's planted eternity in the human heart. And yeah, we can't grasp the whole scope of God's work from beginning to end, So let's learn to try to take life as it comes, essentially. Take life and experience it all as a gift from God. In light of the brevity of life, I'm challenged to make the most of the life that I have. I need to remember to keep the main thing, the main thing. I need to focus on things that have eternal value, which I would propose, as I do all the time, that the things that really matter in life are to pursue our love for God and to love other people. It really does boil down to that. In the end, loving God and loving people is what has value, eternal value. All of our stuff, all the things that we have, all the anxiety-producing stuff that we do and feel pressure to do every day, to have more, to gain more, to do more, to be bigger, to be better, to blah, 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 blah. Why don't you just learn to enjoy life? Why don't you learn to just take what I've given you? And I understand that that's not always easy. I get that. There's a lot of brokenness, a lot of pain, a lot of suffering that goes beyond what, you know, at any given time that we can even imagine. But we don't see the beginning from the end, but we have a God, and we know a God who does. And we keep moving towards God. Keep moving towards God. Keep striving to love other people. I don't know about you, but I'm in the season right now of being, God is working overtime with me. He is showing me how prideful I am and how I don't love people well. I love some people well, but even some of those people might question sometimes how well I love them. And God is just, I want to keep the main thing, the main thing. And in the midst of life, no matter where we are, just to lean into God. I read a book, another very brief little sidetrack, called The One Thing. The guy said, just focus on the one thing. People that focus on the one thing, believe it or not, are like the Bill Gates of the world. Not the people that try to do everything or try to solve every problem or meet everybody's need. Focus on the one thing. And that one thing could change, and it might be one thing one day. But anyway, he goes, and I won't go into all that. But I asked myself, I said, Lord, what is the one thing that you have for me? What is the one thing? And you know what I sensed God say to me? He just took me to Psalm 27:4, which I didn't really take me there because I know it already by heart. But it just that verse came to my mind. And it's King David who said, there's one thing that I've desired of the Lord. One thing. And that will I seek after, that I might dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to seek Him in His temple. This is the King of Israel. You don't think he had plenty of stuff to do? You don't think he had people knocking on his door all the time, all these problems he had to solve, all the grief he suffered in his life, loss of his sons, different times, different turmoil that went on in his life, and he comes right down to it all, and he says, you know, if I could just have one thing, this is what I want. I think that's why David, with all the turmoil of his life and the horrible things actually that he did, I think that's why David was a man after God's own heart. He desired one thing. Life is short. Death awaits us all. And the question is, what are we going to do with the life we've been given by God? What are we going to do? Think maybe of the one thing that you've been putting off for far too long. Might be a relationship that you need to make right. You've put it off for a long time. It might just be something that you felt God asked you to do and you just haven't done it yet. Sit down even today, later, and determine what are the next steps I need to take so that I can finish that work or do what needs to be done. You know, for a few of us, what we do in this life may be spectacular and world-changing, and they may write about us in history books. But for most of us, that's not going to happen. For most of us, what I'm talking about today simply means loving our families, loving our neighbors, and loving our friends, and loving our enemies well. You know, most of us, I'll just be honest with you. I don't think I'm going to be found in any history books. I'm just a guy who came to North Portland 30 years ago with a love for God and a desire to do His will. And I've done that for 30 years, for the most part. And my kids will remember me. And hopefully, my grandkids will remember me. But you know what? The stark reality is, fourth generation, certainly by the fifth, there's no one on this planet that's going to remember the name or the person of Kelly Coho. It's just a reality. And for billions upon billions of people, that's the way it is. But you and I can still hear, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Enter in to the eternal joy of your master. And I've shared this before, but that's my reason for living. I'm almost 60. I got one more year. I've pretty much come to the conclusion. I'm just trying to be honest with you guys. In my little world of pastoring, I'm probably not going to write a national bestseller. Probably not going to go on some big speaking tours. I've just asked God for 300 people. I don't even know if I'll get that. 300 people in the church at one time. Well, not now, obviously, right? What I'm trying to say, if you don't catch it, is that I'm faced with some stark realities. But I hope that even with my failures and shortcomings, that in the end, I pray that even all my kids would at least say, "I know that my dad loved me. Not a perfect guy, but I know that he loved me." And I would hope that my wife would say the same. "He loved me." I would hope that my colleagues could say that. I hope that you could say that. And I don't always do it well, and I'm an 8 on the Enneagram, so I can be a little rough around the edges. But in the end, I just want to live, a life that is pleasing to God. And Ecclesiastes clearly is just asking you to do the same. It's asking you to do the same. And even in light of the overwhelming issues of our day, and I'm just about done, but in the overwhelming issues of our day, I think it means making a difference one person at a time, for most of us. Just making a difference one person at a time. It means breaking the power of racism by cultivating maybe just one relationship with someone who is of a different ethnicity than you. And learning and trying to understand their world. as hopefully they would try to understand yours. Again, I've already said it, but the writer of Ecclesiastes says, there is no enduring remembrance of the wise or of fools, seeing that in the days to come, all will have been long forgotten. It's just the reality. I want to end by, and then we're going to have communion together. And I've shared about my mom before. But my mom is barely remembered today by my own kids. She died 12 years ago now. And my mom was just an ordinary person who struggled through life. She was stricken with a multiple sclerosis, started having seizures in her 30s, 40s. In fact, I have the notorious claim to being the one who brought on the onset of the first seizure she ever had. Because she came into my room looking for a suitcase and opened it up and it was full of marijuana. And in the moment of realizing that her son was a drug dealer, she literally had her first seizure. The thing about my mom is that she loved me well through that. And she was far from perfect. In fact, my mom could scream at pitches that would shatter the ears. And then she met Jesus. And her life totally changed. And she lived out the rest of her days either mostly in a wheelchair and then bedbound. And long after I'd left my home, do you know where my friends would go when they wanted to talk to somebody? They'd go talk to my mom, lying there in her bed. Because she was a woman who, she never wanted you to feel sorry for her about her condition. She would say, I'm the most blessed person alive. And she just loved well. And to me, my mom epitomizes what I'm trying to share with you today. Living life in the face of death. And my mom knew that she was not going to live out of, well, she lived 30 years longer than she was supposed to, actually. And I remember looking at my mom. Sorry, this is real personal for me, but I'm hoping it makes the point of what I think we should be wrestling with today. I remember looking at my mom, and it was just days before she was going to pass. And she looked at me and she said, I just wish I could have been healed. First time I ever heard her say anything like that. And we just looked at each other, and in that moment, we both knew she was going to die. And being confronted with that reality, I saw her once again just give herself over to God. We don't know the beginning from the end. We can't see the whole picture, but all we can do is live life as a gift and receive it as a gift from God. We're going to take communion. You may wonder how I'm going to transition to that. The thing, and I just shared this a little earlier, is that let me tell you something that's absurd. What is absurd is that God Himself would come to earth in the form of a human being, Jesus, And what is absurd is that the very people, the very world that he created, the people that he loved, would torment him, would turn upon him, humiliate him, inflict him with physical and emotional pain. That's absurd. That the creation would rise up against the Creator in that way. And that is what you see here. That's what you see in the death and the resurrection of Jesus. It brings meaning out of absurdity. You think about it. Think about what you believe. Do you know what you believe is absolutely absurd? It is absurd. We believe in a God who came to earth and died. And out of that absurdity, God brings incredible meaning to our lives. When we eat this little wafer, we are remembering, really, that God entered into the absurd. God himself came and entered into this life that we live. He experienced what we experience. And to be quite frank, he experienced death, humiliation, pain. Whatever it is that's going on in our lives, Jesus does know and relate to that. So as you eat the bread today, or this little wafer, I'm encouraging you to remember that Jesus has entered into the absurdity of our lives to bring meaning and hope. And as we drink from the cup that God went so far to bring that meaning to us, as we experience the forgiveness of sin, as God brings some sense to the meaningless, let's drink the cup. And as we do that, as you do that, commit yourself to trusting in the God who sees it all. To the God that even if you don't have immediate answers to your problems or to the concerns or questions that you have, that there is this God, you can have a confidence in God. That in the end, it's all going to be made right. So let's drink from the cup. I'm just going to pray. Father in heaven, this in many ways is a tough message. And I knew it was going to be tough. But we have to, I think, look at the reality of life and then make our choices. What are we going to do? How are we going to respond? I pray, Lord, that in the midst of it all, no matter what that is, or no matter what is happening, that you would help us to keep the main thing, the main thing. That you would help us to love you with all of our heart and all of our soul, and all of our might, and all of our strength. That you would help us, Lord, to love others well. So that in the end, we'll hear, "Well done, good and faithful servant." And that even when we're in the midst of overwhelming pain, even when we're struggling with the issues that are going on in the world. That we would find comfort, peace in our pursuit of you. Thank you that you bring that meaning, the meaning we so desperately crave for, to our lives. Just commit this to you. In Jesus' name, amen.